Hi, and welcome to Song Divers, an interview podcast about singer-songwriters.
We like to go deep in conversation with our favorite musicians in search of honest answers.
What are the ingredients of a great song?
What makes a songwriter tick?
Can a musician make a living these days?
Is Jason Isbell overrated?
What?
My name is Stefan.
And this is Ed.
And you're going to love this episode with the Simon and Garfunkel of pop funk.
If Simon and Garfunkel were metrosexuals with a sense of humor.
Ah, right. Our guest.
Hi.
Hey, well, we're Alex and Danny.
Well, more Danny and Alex, but...
Yeah.
You're listening to Friends Kiss 2 by Danny and Alex. If you've never seen their video for this song, just picture two glamour boys on the beach, decked out inappropriately in turtlenecks and members-only jackets, while a 50s-style beach party is about to break out around them.
Guys are prodigies and they know it. Killer musicians for any age, a great pair of songwriters, and budding media moguls. Their stage persona includes turtleneck cockiness and a hilariously dry sense of humor, which works well because in reality they're humble, sharp, and self-deprecating. In addition to a fresh 4-song EP, the duo is amassing a notable following on Instagram. And once you spend time with them, you'll understand why. So, where are you guys from?
Right here, about 6 blocks away.
Born and raised St. Pete.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. How old are you guys?
We're both double twos, 22.
22.
Mm-hmm. Really?
He's like 6 months older than me, but yeah. We're both.
Mm-hmm. I would have guessed you guys spot. Were 15 or...
Yeah. Yeah. We get 14.
We get that a lot.
Yeah.
I'm lying. I actually thought you guys were a little bit older.
Oh, that's good.
Mostly because of your musical prowess. You guys are really talented players.
Thank
Ed
you.
Ed taught us everything we know.
Well,
I taught you one thing.
Yeah, he taught me one thing.
One thing.
And do you still know it?
Wasn't even music related.
And they've been trying to unlearn it ever since.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you guys grew up in this area. How long have you guys been playing music?
I started when I was about 5, maybe 4. On the cusp of 5.
Okay. And in guitar?
No, I started with drums.
Really?
Yeah. And then moseyed my way into guitar right? First. Yeah. And then a little bass, and then a little keys. And now harp.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like a mini Todd Rundgren.
Okay.
When I met him, he was like, double tracking all of his own shit. And he didn't need me, but he took me under his wing.
Yeah.
I started playing classical music when I was like...
It's a make-a-wish
like
thing.
Like 8 or 9. Yeah. Like 8 or 9.
Big brothers, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And lessons? Did either of you guys take lessons?
Yeah, I took classical lessons over at Bringy.
Okay.
And then we met at a John Hopkins Middle School. We were in the piano magnet program, whatever that was. And, I didn't like him at first because he's, just look at him. He's real cocky and everything.
Yeah, we're going to make this a quick interview.
Yeah. but I was really into Linkin Park and all that kind of thing. And, he learns by ear. He's got perfect pitch. So I'd be sitting across the room playing, and then I'd hear it echo back and I'd be looking around the room who the hell's playing that, man?
Yeah.
I thought I was the best keyboard player in class.
I play it kind of messed up though, just to mess with him,
Yeah.
How old were you guys?
12.
12?
13?
Yeah, I think I was 13.
And I actually got an F in piano because we rebelled against the teacher because they wanted to make us read.
Yeah.
He made me cry one time.
Yeah.
I almost got a referral because I stood up. He was a tuba player. He wasn't a real piano player.
Cried because he almost got a referral.
I almost got a referral. I told him that he was a tuba player and he'd never be anything more. And
it was really something. He stood up.
Yeah.
The guy was yelling at Alex, and Alex stood up and said, "You're just a tuba player, and that's all you'll ever be."
Oh,
and he ran out of the room.
Yeah.
And I ran after him, and he was crying in the bathroom.
Yeah. I'm already wondering who's going to play each of you in a movie. And that scene, especially because, older people play younger people now. It's like 26-year-olds are playing high school kids.
Yeah.
So someone with, he's got stubble already, just really laying into
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
You know?
That was a pivotal moment in our history, I think.
So... you guys were friends, and were you doing music together at that time?
Pretty much,
just,
yeah.
You just
yeah.
immediately. Yeah. Just terrorizing this guy together, and that was a
absolutely.
Bonding experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So did you guys bond over same likes in music?
Yeah, he was always listening to oldies. He kind of turned me on to the
Yeah,
the
my
stuff.
Family made me, like, you know... It was like Chinese water torture, but with like 70s music. They just kept it on over and over again. Mm-hmm. When I was like...
Wait, my dad raised you too?
Yeah. Yeah, when I was like 10 or 11, my dad was like showing me Frank Zappa and Steely Dan and like just all kinds of crazy shit.
So
and
let's always, talk about your dad just yeah. for a second, because he was a musician.
Yeah, yeah, like, he was a bass player.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
and a guitar player somewhat.
Right. So did he actually... work with you on music, or did you just kind of soak up your
he was
own,
always like... trying to get me to like play sports. I don't think he wanted me to be a musician. He's always getting me to do crazy shit like karate and dirt bike racing and all kinds of stuff. But you know, I would used to hang out with him and his like dad bands playing in bars.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was dope. I thought it was cool.
Did he have the I know you had the detached
Yeah, that
garage.
Came later.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
We always had like a music room, like a designated room with just a bunch of instruments.
Yeah. Well, you told me that he never pushed you to record or write songs.
Oh, no. I just wanted just to it. Do it because yeah. it looked like fun. You know? Yeah. I mean, that's like all that was important in our family is like comedy and music. Everything else does not matter.
That explains
that's
a lot.
That's why he's got yeah. shitty morals.
That's why I have no moral compass. I'm just mm-hmm. all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, that. So, you know, going to school and like everybody was listening to, at the time, it was like Eminem and like all kinds of stuff. And I just hated it. Like now I like it. But, you know, I was bringing a cassette player with like the Who's Greatest Hits and like, you know, that shit. So when I met him and he was playing Linkin Park,
mm-hmm.
I was like... I hated him at first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like, it's understandable.
It yeah. is, yeah. I don't blame you one bit.
But he, you know, I was like still being taught this stuff, and my dad kind of showed him all the stuff too. Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask, so what was your musical upbringing, and what was your excuse for liking Linkin Park?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, I'm just going to address the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Brian Merrill's my uncle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just going to put that out there.
Yes.
That's how I initially met you.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of listeners know who Brian is from Barely mm-hmm. Pink and the Ditch Flowers and so forth. But also your dad
mm-hmm.
and your mother are both musicians.
Yeah, pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
And my grandfather played piano. He got me into playing piano.
So. Very musical family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad was a bass player.
Yep.
Seems like everybody's dad is a bass player.
Yeah.
So you're 12 or 13 when you met, and you're taking piano class at John Hopkins Middle School, and it seems like very shortly after that, we were playing together on a couple of shows.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't...
George Harrison thing.
Yeah. Mm. Like, were you 14 or something?
Yeah, we were a little bit older then. I think we were, like, early high school then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was probably just a few years after we met.
Right.
Yeah.
So, because Brian, your uncle... and I were in a band, the Ditch Flowers, and we were doing shows. And I remember Brian, our keyboard player couldn't do this George Harrison tribute show that we were doing. And I'm like, who can we get on keyboards? And Brian kept saying, well, my nephew's really good. And I'm like, focus, Brian, focus. Yeah. We need a keyboard player. And he
we
kept
real solutions, Brian.
And it was getting close to time to really, we had to rehearse and get ready. And he's like, my
dog is a good falsetto.
So finally, I'm like, so your nephew's how old? It's 14 or 15. I'm like, okay, well, you know, if he's... And I couldn't... Like, you were better than any keyboard player we had ever played with, you know? I was like, okay.
We'll give him the easy parts.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. But anyway, that was a fun show.
Somehow I got roped into that. I don't know how I...
Well, we did too, right? We did All Things Must Pass, and then we did Revolver and Rubber Soul.
That's I didn't true. Do that That's one. Right. I did just All Things Must Pass.
Yeah.
So I need to ask the question then, in terms of talent level, in that time, you guys are 12, 13, meaning playing, like, are there other good musicians around you that are your age, or are you guys both kind of figuring out quickly, like, we're pretty decent compared to the other
people? No, we knew pretty early on that we're just the best musicians that have ever lived.
But we were always looking, man. We were always looking for, like, a drummer who was our age, and it was tough. I mean, we found... There's definitely a few people around here that are really good.
But... Nobody took it seriously at that time, and still don't really. There's still very few people who take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. You know, which is funny to hear you guys say, considering the persona that you guys have in terms of taking it seriously. You know,
yeah,
oh yeah,
yeah.
Because my musical friends, when I'll show you your stuff to them, they're like, holy shit, these guys can play, you know? And like, and the songs are catchy as hell. Certainly there's a little tongue in cheek to them, but, but my friends that are non-musical, they, you know, they're like, oh, these guys are funny. You know, I'm like, no, they're not. I mean, like, yes, it's fun. You don't get it, you know?
Yeah. But we love anything you have to get, so.
Right. Certainly. So that's an interesting thing too, because I'm not that much older than you guys, and I, again, I'm not Django Reinhardt. Well, when you're a level enough of a musician trying to find other people that can be a part of it, and even if you do, then like just find people you can stand to be around.
Yeah,
that's another huge part of it.
So you guys are Danny and Alex for the most part. You're doing stuff as a duo, but when you guys play live, I just saw you play GMF. I've seen you a few other times. You guys are playing with a band.
GMF stands for Gasparilla Music Festival.
Gasparilla Music Festival, yes, yeah, which we're lucky to have here in Tampa. Mm-hmm. So yeah, talk about that a little bit. Talk about that kind of evolution of finding other musicians and what that's been like.
We feel very lucky to be playing with those two. I mean,
oh, they're fantastic.
Yeah, they were excellent.
If we would have met them, you know, back then, I mean, they're younger than us. They're like 18, 19.
Mm-hmm. What's your drummer's name?
Natalie DiPergola.
And then on bass, we got Sebastian Siaka.
He's crazy.
Well, the goal was always to find someone who was better than Danny on that instrument. Because, like, you know, his main thing is guitar and, like, keys and vocals. But he's, you know, he's a mean bass player, drummer. He can do it pretty much.
I fill him when I have to. Uh-huh.
But he's, like a good bass line level. Yeah. But we wanted to find someone who was, like, actually a bass player, actually a drummer.
And they're much better than me at those instruments. So
like any good CEO, right? Find people better at their jobs.
Yeah. Absolutely, And, Sebastian is, like... I love real bass players, like, who actually care about bass and, like, care about, like, tone and, like, that's just insane to find, where it's not just a guitar player who has picked up a bass.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different thing.
What's funny to say, too, where you're like, we want to find someone who's better than Danny on bass, when usually the bass player is, like, the worst guitar player in the band.
Yeah,
but he wants to be in the band.
Which
was me several times. how I know that. So how did you find them? How did you find these other two?
Well, he's played in bands with both of them.
Yeah, I played in a band called Moreau. Have you heard of them? It was, like, a couple years ago, they're not a thing anymore. But,
I've heard of... Is it Garden Party, right?
Garden Club.
Garden Club.
Yeah, I played in Garden Club, too, and Natalie was that was kind of her project. She was the drummer in that band. And I met Sebastian through Moreau, and I just knew that I had to have them in the band, man, because they're killer. They're so good.
Yeah. So, Danny, do you do anything else outside of this?
No, I can't stand other people's music, so I just play ours.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
I gig on the weekends with singers and stuff.
Yeah.
Play the hard rock and all that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way Danny's looking at you right now when you say that. He's kind of like, yeah, you would.
Yeah. So it's because I have to. He doesn't have to. He can sit around and
and do nothing.
In terms of you guys getting this project going, like, you guys have been playing together. You guys also have, I would say, unique to people your age, unique taste in music, too. So when I saw you guys covered Prince and you covered Peter Gabriel.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that, because, you know, in terms of musical influence and what you guys bonded over musically and what you guys enjoy covering, because that generally leads into how you guys start to write, which we'll get
into. Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
It would always be like, we'd always go through phases. Like, when we first met in middle school, it was like the Beatles, then we moved on to Queen. Then we moved on.
We had
to
a Big Doors phase.
Big Doors phase. Yeah, got that stuff out of the way early on.
Yeah,
I never listened to it again because I'm sick of it. But,
And we just are at the tail end of a very long Prince phase.
Prince phase. We got into the Time,
at least
Sheila E. All that
years.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Well, in your videos, you got the purplish blue guitar too, and I've seen the Strat start to come in more. So I noticed your Prince phase starting to taper off.
Right. Yeah.
That's funny you're talking about the phases, because another show we did together, we were doing a Beatles tribute show or a John Lennon show, and you guys asked me to sit in with you.
Oh, yeah. We did the Free as a Bird.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that.
And I came to the practice space to run through the tunes, and we spent like 20 minutes on the John Lennon songs and then jammed for an hour and a half on Led Zeppelin.
You know,
it's like, just do like whatever they're doing, they do what they want to do. Yeah. Like, our focus is on Led Zeppelin right now.
That sounds about right.
So you went through the Led Zeppelin phase.
That's really what got me into music, is my dad had this live DVD of Led Zeppelin from 1970, 1973, you know, the good years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this one video of Jimmy Page playing Since I've Been Loving You. Mm-hmm. He's just ripping it. And I watched that so many times, and that's just the one thing that made me want to do that, because he just looked dope. He's just ripping a Les Paul at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
I mean, that is rock and roll.
He's in a dragon suit. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Alex, what about you?
As far as...
In terms of, like, you know, he's talking about what he saw, like, really made you want to do this. I mean, you guys are pursuing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And certainly professionals currently. Did you have that same, like, something you saw, and, like, this is the trigger thing or the catalyst, or is it just kind of gradual?
Lawrence Welk for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, Lawrence Welk. I've heard so many stories of me marching around with a baton and diapers listening to Lawrence Welk.
And that was last week.
Yeah, that was last week. I think it was more of a gradual thing because just kind of growing up in it, just being around it and just seeing, like, you know, Danny was recording all those multi-track stuff over at Zen. And I was like, that's awesome. And then I went over to Brian, wrote my own songs, then had Danny come play on my stuff. And just, we were always kind of competing. And then figured out that it was better if we just joined forces and did what we were best at.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I had a kind of come to Jesus moment like that. It was more just gradual.
So we're talking about, I'm just going to clarify, Zen Recording Studio in Pinellas Park, where Steve Connolly's the engineer.
And Steve Connolly runs through our history too. He's
All four of us.
He's been like our mentor.
Musical guru.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's given us a lot of recording philosophy advice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not even so much technical recording stuff. Mm-hmm. He's done that too, but, like,
he doesn't technically really like what we're doing now.
No,
but, you know,
no, he hates our music. But
but it's okay because we take the philosophy from.
Yeah, he just kind of.
But it's a compliment. If Steve hates something you're doing, that's a compliment because that means he actually listened to it and he's digesting it. You know. Yeah.
He likes it, like, if he's heard it a lot. Like, if we keep playing it for him, he'll be like, yeah, it's all right.
The first song we did, 4-4, he really likes that one because we did live drums. And, like, when we recorded that, we actually got a live take rather than just, you know, programming drums and all that stuff. He liked that a lot.
Well, how about if you guys play that one?
I'm gonna write it again. I'm gonna write it again. I'm gonna
Yeah.
My previous band, we were finishing up some tracks. I remember you guys would come in. You had the session after us usually. So we'd like cross paths and Steve would be like, gotta hear these guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Good
yeah.
players. You know? But yeah, he certainly would go through these phases where we do something he liked it the week before. The next week he'd come in, he's like, don't listen to me. I'm listening to trash right now, but I really like it. I just like a bunch of f***ed up shit.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, well, is that what we should be doing? You know? Because you do kind of trust him implicitly because I was saying earlier, he's this musical Dumbledore.
Yes, he really is.
And he won't give you a straight answer either. He'll kind of like lead you into what he thinks you should, you know?
He'll tell you some kind of thing that you'll realize like a week later, like, oh, that's what
he also spins so deep into whatever he's doing that he'll be into that. Like, and he's such a open-minded, nice guy for all of his experience and everything. Oh, yeah. I'm always surprised. Like, yeah, I had a band in the, you know, they just picked up the instruments their dad bought them for him an hour before the session, and they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
Is an optimist. Yeah.
Steve finds something good in everything he does.
Yes, he does.
Which is great. Yeah. He really taught us that, like, you know, music recording is just about like getting some kind of feeling across, like just like trying to get a moment. Even if you don't record, you know, live, it's got to feel like a moment. You know, it's got to feel like something happened and you captured something.
But we would drive him crazy because we were always like referencing Steely Dan. Should it be like, man, how do we get those Asia drums or just that kind of thing? And he's like, it doesn't f***ing matter, man. The emotion.
He doesn't give a shit.
That's funny you should mention that, though. I was in there doing a session on one of my own songs and I loved the snare sound. It was this real tight kind of 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's the snare sound I want. Like, remember that snare sound. And you had tuned the drums. And I thought, that explains it.
Yeah.
You know?
It took, that was a big...
we spent a long time on that snare.
Yeah, that was a big realization when we realized that, like, live drums can sound good.
Right.
If you just work on it and EQ it right and muffle it. Because we were always looking for that, like, tight, like, Isley Brothers.
It was a real crisp, kind of tight, you know, snare sound. Yeah. Like, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, it depends on what you're going for, but in general, I would say that live drum sound, even if you had a, you know, a track and you or a loop and you go match it on the drums, that live sound, if done right, like, it is so much about that imperfection or the non-perfection of something that feels real or right or good. It's almost like a face that's too symmetrical.
Especially with DAWs too, because I mean, you can just zoom in all the way to like milliseconds and just put everything on time. But and we kind of went through a phase where like everything live that we'd record, we would just like quantize everything and tune everything way too much to the point where it'd take the life out of it and sounded weird. And we'd send it to Steve and he'd be like, some kind of comb filtering on the vocal. Doesn't sound good. And he was right. It sounded
muffled.
Sounds whack. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're through that phase?
We're through that, I think.
At a good midpoint now where things are in time, but they're not too in time.
Yeah.
You know?
Because we'll do program drums, but then we'll do live bass instead of like synth bass. Because we used to do like synth bass and all these like MIDI instruments and stuff.
I was going to ask you now, like, what's your recording process now? Where are you recording the latest stuff?
We've got a studio over in Gulfport that we kind of put together. And it's pretty basic. I mean, we've just got a piano in there, some keyboards, drum set. Guitar, bass, that kind of thing. But I love talking about this. I got a vintage drum machine from it was like 1982 or something like that. It's a Sequential Circuits drum tracks. And we sampled it and mixed it and made it sound really good. And we used those drums on everything.
Every single song we use those drums.
I was going to ask you about the drums because I know Natalie's really good.
She played on 4/4, one of our songs. That was a live take with her.
Then we just got lazy though because it's hard to make drums sound good.
They just sound great right out of the, you know. It's
the sound that we want to, because we're always trying to make live drums sound almost fake. So it was easier to get a good sounding fake thing and then put some room around it and kind of mix that. And we'll do like live hi-hats and overdubs and stuff on the toms and kind of helps.
But yeah, now we do everything. We, you know,
mixing
right
yourself
there,
too, and all
mixing, mastering, everything. Yeah.
Well, the stuff sounds really good. I mean, that's just a straight compliment. I mean, it's all, there is a polish to it. Yeah. But to your point about, you know, mixing that drum sound, but then a live bass take, like, it doesn't sound robotic.
Yeah. But we always go, we always aim for Steely Dan.
We do.
Quality.
Yeah.
That's always the goal. You know, that's, to us, like, Asia, that whole record, and, like, The Night Fly.
Gaucho's too polished, though.
Yeah.
Well, even the Dan got to that point where they said they went past perfection and they did something that was so well mixed and so well recorded that it sounded like nothing.
Right.
So they canned the song.
Well, I remember reading about some of those sessions. They spend like 2 days just miking the drums and just, you know, like...
Oh, I heard Donald spent 2 weeks on the delay settings on a vocal.
Every variation of the delay, yeah.
They did just hundreds of different mixes and just like...
They had all those like old vintage synths and like they were going out of tune, so he threw it out the window.
I love shit like that.
Well, and they made one of the first drum machines too, because they were working with Roger Nichols, and Donald and I guess Walters, who were pissed off because the timing wasn't exact. So he turns to Roger and he's like, why can't you just make a fucking machine to do this? And he came back $100,000 later and had the Wendell drum machine.
Just one of the first drum machines.
So you guys are talking about Steely Dan right now, and I'm assuming you guys had friends that would come out and see your shows. Like, were you playing, you know, as you started to play together?
Yeah,
and
what was funny.
I was going to say, like, are they all confused about, like, what the hell is this stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or did they think it was kind of cool?
I don't know, because we'd have girls from our school come out
and check
us out, and they'd be like,
we'd be playing FM nice, by Steely Dan. And I don't know what and we'd be playing our originals, which were, like, basically knockoffs of the Doors.
We'd probably be a lot further if we catered to them, you know?
I'm sure they thought we were insane. Like, they didn't understand.
You start to realize your friends' parents are the ones that are coming.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it was.
We played at this place over in Haynes Road. It's not there anymore, but it was called Krabby Q. And my grandfather booked the show, and he'd make little flyers and I'd hand them out, like, come see Sound Parlor Live at Krabby Q.
They're really good. You're kind of love them.
That's a great voice.
Yeah. So it was a bit embarrassing, yeah. But they actually came out, and we had some hardcore fans.
I don't know why. I
think they were more just like intrigued, like one of these two idiots.
What the hell are they doing?
Yeah.
Let's talk more about the writing process and recording and stuff. So you guys have a backlog of stuff you're working on?
Oh, yeah. We've got 40 or 50 songs to get to.
Most of the songs we're doing right now are already like, I don't know, 8 years old.
Like 8 years old.
Yeah. Like we're working on one called NC-17 right now that we wrote.
We were like 8 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
We
were coming up with those chord progressions that
NC-17
became the song.
Is at least 3 years old.
Yeah.
Because I remember you guys asked me to do some little graphic like a neon.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, yeah. Those are at least four years old.
They're old.
Yeah.
So you guys put out a EP with four tunes on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most
of
those songs are old
of
too.
50 tunes. How come the 4-song EP? Are you guys just perfectionists?
Yeah, we've been getting faster.
Yeah, it took a long time to get to the point where we liked what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like we're finally there. So that EP, that was when we first got the studio.
Which is great, by the way. It's really, really enjoyable.
Thank you. Yeah, we were doing new production techniques and stuff like that, and we just got better at mixing, too. Because we would always argue about, like, oh, man, we need to hire a producer. Oh, man, we need to spend $1,000 on a really good mixer.
Yeah.
And then we just realized you can just do it all yourself, you know?
Yeah, if you just lock yourself in a room for a good 3 years, you can learn pretty much anything.
It took a long time to get to that point.
We spent at least 4 years just not doing anything but going to the studio.
And we were
trying
terrible
things.
At it.
Yeah, producing really horrible stuff. And it just sounded like ass all the time. And then,
but some people might like.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's in
that's
right
true,
now.
Yeah. But Steve liked it.
Yeah.
He's an ass guy. I've always said that about Steve. Yeah.
And then, I don't know what happened. We just kind of clicked at one point where we started liking what it sounded like. I think the thing that clicked the most was that it has to sound good when you first record it.
Yeah.
That's what really changed it for us, because we would record just horrible shit and spend 6 months trying to mix it.
Yeah, you can't EQ, you know, turd. You know,
no.
Exactly. And that's what, I mean, it's, you know, Steve would often say that. He's like, look, I can only do so much. You have to play well, you know, if you want it to sound really good. You
so
know?
Come back in 13 years.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well,
exactly,
so I don't know if you guys have, you know, heard of the 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so it's interesting that you guys say that, where it's, I think a lot of people probably have that. I don't know what your experience was with that too, because you sort of self-taught and then went and taught yourself to read and stuff like that later on. But I remember that time when it clicked, you know, where, like, you know, Neo seeing the Matrix, you know, he finally gets it. But it is almost like that 10,000 hours piece, but it's 4 hours in the studio, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, it's working now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A quick interlude about one of the companies supporting this podcast. Ed, I think we can both agree that the best tasting songs are those that happen naturally.
That's true. Wait, you can't really taste a song, though. That part's not.
That's also true of the food we choose to consume, which is why our favorite new artist on the healthy protein charts is ButcherBox. 100% grass-fed beef delivered on dry ice to your door anywhere in the lower 48.
So, does that make Alaska like the upper...
And just open the box. If you're into more genres than just beef, ButcherBox has you covered. They also deliver Alaskan wild sockeye salmon, free-range organic chicken...
Wow, there's got to be like 11 pounds of meat in here.
Heritage breed pork and special bacon.
Special bacon?
Special, because it's free. Use code SONGDIVERS at checkout to get $20 off and free bacon in your first ButcherBox. And shipping's free, too.
Special bacon and special shipping. That's special.
Now, can you grill as well as you can play guitar? Visit ButcherBox.com to order.
You've had some advantages of being around Steve.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And being around your uncle Brian Merrill, I don't think we mentioned, he also is a studio rat, and he's amassed, you know, professional quality gear.
Like, if you would just let me use it, you know. I feel like we went through a phase where we were always looking for these like crazy synth sounds and stuff because we thought we wanted to like...
Oh, that was a long
We would have conversations where Danny would be like, dude, you can take 808s and a tuba and put it together and like nobody's ever done that before. And we were always trying these like weird, just like, you know...
We wanted to sound like something that's never been heard before.
We had to go around the sun until we got back to Steve's first point.
Yeah.
And just lay down a good bass, EQ it and compress it. And that's all we wanted.
Yeah, now we don't think at all about, like, it has to sound cutting edge.
No.
Like, we just want to make music that we like listening to.
Yeah.
Which took, you know, as we said, 8 years to get to that point.
Yeah.
We always were like, dude, we need to change the world with this song. Like, it doesn't matter at all.
I get it. I mean, I talked about with Ronnie Elliott on the last one, this idea of, you know, what would it have been like to have never heard anything like Zeppelin, you know, and then hear it for the first time? And again, there was the first time we heard that, but it was in the context of everything else that existed,
you know?
And so, you all of a sudden, it becomes really daunting when you start to both appreciate it because you've gotten to a certain level of musicianship, and then you realize, like, I'm never going to be as good as this thing I like, or everything's been done at this point. Why am I even bothering, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a hard thing to get through, and all of a sudden you're like, well... Like businesses, you know, I can do something really well. Like, doesn't mean it has to be the only one.
Yeah.
You
know? Mm-hmm. I think the thing really to think about is, like, you know, you can make something, you can make a song sound like anything, but when you first write it, you kind of have an idea of what it should be. And the more to that you can make it, usually the better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now we've gotten to the point doing it so long that we know how to get the sound that we hear. So,
right. That's what took forever to do.
That's what took forever.
Yeah. We always...
What's the, as far as writing, do you guys... sit down and write together, or
usually not. No,
are you bringing songs to each other?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we start title first.
Yeah, okay. That's we have a very at least I do. I have a very specific.
Do you have a notebook with titles?
I use it on my phone.
Okay. We should start a chart for each guest.
Yeah,
whether you're because I would have been like music first, lyrics first. I would have never even thought title first.
Oh, but title first. Comes at whole and completely different.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah,
that's leading the pack right now. Is title first of our.
So what we do is, I don't know if you do this, but
I do this, Danny. I do.
Now you can make up anything.
So what we do,
is
we open our ass.
I'd like to light a diaper on fire.
Yeah. We stick a candle in it. Yeah. No. We like to singe our butt on a Bunsen burner, and then we start.
Mm.
Yeah, no, I look at a title. And you think of a melody that would fit that title. Mm-hmm. So you just like sing, this is the first thing that comes to mind, sing that title.
It's got to be a good title though.
It's got to be a title that has like something to it. It's got to have like a perspective. You know what I mean? Like we have a song Laundry.
Mm.
And it's about, you know, you're with like a girl and she moves out and then you have to do your own laundry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so
but even deeper than that, what's the metaphor, you know?
So it's kind of like a
that's it.
It's sort of like a feminist, like a pro feminism kind of a
even know.
Timely.
That's
timely.
It's more of a meninist.
Yeah, I think it's it's not even
it's very topical.
But yeah, it's got to have like a thing to it. It's got to have somewhere to go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just sing that and then finish the phrase of whatever that melody would be. And then you got the chorus. And then, you know, you just do the basic shit and you go to, like, the relative minor for the verse or whatever it is, you know. It writes itself.
Are you guys worried about being too...
Can we redo this entire interview and do it in New York accents? It writes itself.
Hey, I'm writing it.
I'm telling you. You go to the relative minor, whatever. You put on Steely Dan, you sing over the instrumental passages. You got a hit.
So are you worried? Are you worried about being too formulaic then?
No, I like formulas.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a reason for them. Yeah. You know, like the, the common...
I hate when people do like just crazy shit, like, you know, changing time signatures just because of it. Like, I just...
Yeah, I don't like... whenever I've tried to do music first, I always end up making it way too complicated.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be such like a... Like the way I voice the chords or something, there's already such a strong implied melody that when I try and sing something or write something to that, it's like there's no wiggle room to write a good melody, you know?
Alex, I imagine you're writing on piano when you're writing.
Yeah.
Danny, are you writing on piano and
More complicated stuff I've written has been on piano, but the simple good ones are on guitar.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And then like your topics.
Yeah.
So we should talk about the fact that A, you guys are in the studio not wearing turtlenecks.
No.
So are you guys, do you feel uncomfortable?
We'll have to call us out.
I'm
like
kind
this.
Of exposed, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, talk a little bit about that. What's the, like, why turtlenecks? Why that shit?
We just don't have to think about it.
Yeah. It's just something to do.
So you're just Steve Jobsing?
Exactly. Yeah. It's just something, you know, we throw the turtlenecks on, the little girls go crazy. It's just what's, you know, it's
Jesus Christ.
I've seen it. Yeah. I've seen you guys perform. Yep.
It's just something quirky to do.
Some of the little boys are going crazy.
Yeah. Don't forget about the little
boys. That's true. Yeah.
So, you know, and I've, in following you guys, it's like, that's great. But then it occurred to me, you played Gasparilla Music Festival. It's outside. Not a cold day.
No.
We were debating whether or not to actually wear the
turtlenecks. I was going to ask how true to the look you guys stayed.
Up until the last second, we were not going to wear them.
But I'm glad we did because it was filmed, and we would have looked ridiculous if I was just wearing a polo out there.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. We should say our friends, the Tampa Sessions.
Yes.
They're a friend of the podcast, did a great job. They were all over that stage, which was really, really cool. Do you want to talk a little bit about that set since we were at that point?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, you guys put on a great show. How did you feel about it?
Hot.
Yeah.
It felt hot.
It was a good audience.
It felt good. Yeah, there was. I like the venue. We weren't sure about what it was going to sound like because it's kind of weird. You know, it's like the audience is up here and you're playing down here, and the speakers are.
It's like a little coliseum.
Yeah, it's a little coliseum. It was weird, but sounded good.
I was gonna say, for people that haven't been to Gasparilla Music Fest, they've really three, four stages set up.
Yeah.
And you guys played in was it Furman Amphitheater? I think is what it's called.
I think so.
Yeah, which is a really cool, intimate, but still great little space.
Mm-hmm.
Little's not the right word, but is maybe seats what, like 600?
It's petite.
Something like that, yeah.
It is petite. Yeah, tastefully petite.
Yeah.
But you guys had a good audience, good vibe, good energy. How much of that audience, did you feel like, all right, these are our fans, we expected this, or did you feel like you were playing to a whole new crowd?
Definitely, like, it was kind of mixed, because we'd look out and we'd see some of the younger people, like mouthing along to the lyrics to some of our songs, like Break Up Haircut, which we liked, but... I was surprised everybody freaked out when we did Sledgehammer because they were all of that age. You know, they all like, there was mostly parents in the audience and they loved it.
Yeah. I was going to say you guys covered a Prince song and then Sledgehammer, which was awesome.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool.
The Prince song was definitely just for us. Nobody knows that.
Yeah.
Song,
nobody knew that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to do one for you.
Yeah.
There was a short set, so that was risky.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still a great tune, but like you said, you
we know, just, don't, we just don't care. You know, we're just playing just cause we like it. If we were actually thinking about it, we shouldn't have played half of those songs, you know, especially that one.
Well, they're originals.
Yeah, especially those.
Can we go back to the writing for a second? Because I'm thinking about, we're talking about the turtlenecks and all that stuff, and we talked about the writing process is, you know, you guys are title first.
Yes.
Almost always.
Mm-hmm.
Or always.
Always for me.
So and
more recently, yeah.
Your YouTube channel, there's so much... creativity in the visuals and humor. Does that affect your writing? Does that work into the writing process, or is that like an afterthought?
That's kind of an afterthought. We kind of base that off the song.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if YouTube kind of affects how you write your music. Like, do you think about the...
Yeah, like are you writing for that forum?
Well, we always write with the idea in mind that it just should be something that we haven't quite heard before. The idea should be something that nobody else would do because it's too stupid.
Well, and the reason that happened, too, is because when we were, you know, 12, 13, we were writing such generic, nonsensical lyrics that we got so fed up with that. Because, you know, it's like, how many times do you sing about going home? how many times you sing about, you know, just these like really, really, you know.
And back then, it didn't even make sense.
Yeah, we didn't even meet, like, you know, we wrote more what sounded good to sing versus there was no
meaning. Yeah, we wrote consonant first back then.
Yeah, there was no there was no meaning behind the lyrics. We got fed up with that. And then when we finally started having songs with a, like, specific message and idea, we, you know, people resonate way more with that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And I think it's more interesting, too.
Yeah.
I was curious, because it's so visual. For someone who's checking you out on YouTube, it seems like such a fully formed package, the video and the song and the lyric. And
well, they kind of, because they're so specific, they kind of lend themselves to visuals like that. Right. Yeah. They're always about something quirky that we can put something easy to.
For anybody that hasn't seen that stuff, I mean, you guys have acting chops. Like, they're really funny, you know? Like, you have something pretty, it's not, I wouldn't say cultivated, but like, it's a practiced thing that you guys are doing that resonates.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's not far off from how we just talk to each other. That's just kind of, we've just been doing that for 10 years. So.
Yeah.
Just stick a camera on it.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny too, because the videos are really funny, but then if you just listen to the song on its own, it's catchy as hell. Like when I was doing the, you know, research, let's call it research for the, for this, I ended up going back and listening to Breakup Haircut like 6 times. I'm like, this is just super catchy. Like, you know, so I think we should talk a little bit, because you guys are doing this really well right now, which I'm sure you're aware of. I mean, some of your videos have 200,000+ views on Instagram.
Yeah.
You're coming up on, I think you're just coming up on 20,000 followers on your page. And like, I saw when I was going and checking things out, it was like, you should check this out. Questlove likes this page. Like, when that happened, are there other people following you that you're like, holy smokes, like, we're getting people's attention?
Pretty much just we went to Orlando and met Questlove, and he reposted, because we like stalked him pretty much. We waited until he like walked in the back, and we had an acoustic guitar and a melodica, and we played this one really obscure Prince song that we knew that he'd like.
Super nerdy.
It was really nerdy, but he ended up he whipped out his phone and filmed it and posted it on his Instagram. So we got a lot of, we had like a couple hundred followers at that point. So we got a lot of his fans following us. And that was kind of a point that he jumped off to kind of get more followers.
So were you doing the live, like, because it was like every Thursday right now you guys are doing live stuff?
Yeah, we kind of quit, but
I'm sure it'll be back though.
Yeah. Well, don't let me hold you to anything. Yeah. But there's a real cadence to it, you know. Yeah. And I was listening to an interview on the one that comes on after Fresh Air, it's on the CBC. You know what I'm talking about? I'll have to go back. We'll dub in the name of the show. It was they were interviewing the guy that used to run the Rap Caviar playlist at Spotify, and he just got picked up by YouTube within the last year, and he's like in charge of artist development, you know, actually developing artists through that. And he talked about, you could be a great songwriter and you could be a good performer, and it has to be so much more now if you really want to do it, because there's so many people doing it. If you're already the full package, that's what somebody is now looking for, you know. And then also there's a lot of musicians too that's like, they don't really even want to be signed. They're recording on their own. They don't need money for production. They don't need a producer because they've got it figured out. They've spent the 10,000 hours for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's a really interesting time in music, and part of what this podcast is really focused on is like, what do you guys want to do with it? How do you see it being successful? Where do you guys go next? What do you want to do with this?
Well, at this point, we've been doing, you know, those short little Instagram videos with the songs and just trying to really... we've been marketing those. We've been doing Instagram advertisements and stuff like that. And it seems to be working, because we've gotten a lot of fans, like, you know, way more than we ever would have if we just, you know, just, I guess, did covers and didn't promote it and stuff like that. So we've been promoting it. I think we found our tribe, so to speak. We've kind of,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, but that's interesting too, because, you know, so for, you know, when I'm not doing music, I work in marketing and sponsorship sales, and finding that marketing nuance is really, really tough, because similar to recording, it's easy to say, great, just put some money behind it and throw an ad on Facebook or Instagram. It only works if the content's good. Same thing of laying down a good track. And you guys have stumbled upon something that people are really enjoying. And I found myself doing it too. I'm like, you guys got to check this out. This is, you know,
texting
it out to my friends, because it's the music's really good. So I knew they'd enjoy that, but it's just funny. Like, you guys are, again, it's whether it's acting chops or whatever, like, it's good. It's good. So it's sticky. You know?
Yeah. We try to make everything we post like, Just like, it's always fun to us at the time. You know what I mean? Like, if we don't have fun doing it, or we don't laugh at it, we don't post it. So we just, I think people can, you know, kind of feel that.
We've got to both agree on it.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
We went through a period where I was doing most of the posting, and then we got in a fight about that because, yeah, you know, people like my captions way better than his captions. And
I do personally like your captions better.
I hate captions in general. I'm totally against them.
I know. But yeah, we just pretty much the secret there is we just did, when we did the advertisement, we did 100% female audience because we knew all the dudes would be like, you guys suck, man. Get out of here.
Yeah, we just hate men in general.
Yeah, we're very against men in this band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say too that seeing a lot of the reposting that you guys do is really fun. I mean, you've legit cultivated a Instagram audience. How much have you seen that transfer to plays on Spotify and people
quite
coming to shows?
Yeah, it's been the most on Spotify.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of streams on there.
Yeah, we've got, I think our most streamed is like 230,000 on
which
Breakup
is,
Haircut
which
or something.
Really good, yeah.
And now, Breakup Haircut by Alex and Danny.
Danny right, and
Breakup Haircut,
and
so we'll get into that. We'll okay. get into that.
Yeah, we'll f*** up Greg in a second.
Yeah. Break up.
A dong diver's posted us on a comment.
Nice.
Ready?
But I know what she wants to say. That something don't taste the same to her anymore. Mm-mm. Cause all that's left to do is get a breakup haircut. I'll get a fade for Jade and a fro for Zoe. Yeah, a breakup haircut. I'll get a trim for Kim and a short for Courtney. Break up with me, that's alright. I'll just cut my hair tonight. It's all good. There's a barber in my neighborhood. What can I say when the next one takes some bullshit? Like you're just not my type. I never, yeah, but I pick up my jar to comb it till it stays just right.
We can break it up, I swear.
Tomorrow I'll be rocking Jerry curls in my hair. Cause all I've got to do is get a breakup haircut. I'll get a fade for Jade and a fro for Zoe. Yeah, a breakup haircut. I'll get a trim for Kim and a short for Courtney. Yeah, break up with me, that's alright. I'll just cut my hair tonight. Break up with me, it's all good.
A breakup.
seems to work for us that we don't spend any money on anything except promotion.
Yeah.
That's usually the opposite of what happens.
We did, we did a video a while ago when we were Sound Parlor called Can You Sing Like Me? It's on YouTube still.
Oh, I've seen it.
And we spent a lot of money making that, and then we put it out. It just kind of fell flat because it was like there's nowhere to go. Like, yeah. We didn't have a marketing
plan.
You
still
got to
put it in front of people, so... Totally.
But is that picking up now, though? Because that video looks so, to me, it looks so pro. Like,
yeah.
For what it is, I mean, not pro, like super polished. It's kind of
your dance
kind of goofy.
Are,
like,
yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
to
me, the really strong thing about that video that sets it apart from your other ones is Danny's facial hair.
Yeah,
so. That is. You know. That is a talking point.
We've had
we should
a lot
bring
of to bring
was
back.
That planned or was
that,
that
was just a
snapshot
of,
in time?
Part of the era, you know. Mm-hmm. That was just what was happening in 2014.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, you must have missed that one.
So it shows here. You said you guys aren't actually playing out that much. When you do play out, are you seeing an older crowd? Are you seeing a mix? Are you seeing? Like, are people coming up to me like, yeah, I found you on Instagram, and that's how I saw you, and I want to come out and see you play?
I don't think we've been able to test it yet.
Yeah,
we
haven't fully tested it.
Most of our listeners are not from this area.
Right.
Like, we have the least amount of fans in St. Pete.
I was going to ask if you think about, have you talked about trying to put together a tour, like a mini tour?
We're trying.
Yeah, we've talked about it.
We're trying to figure out the way that makes the most sense.
Could Natalie and Sebastian are on board with
it? Oh, yeah, they would love to, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so you guys are 22, you said.
Yeah.
So are you guys in school? Are you working? Like, because this is an interesting piece of that whole thing about touring, because if you have a job, you know, it's tough to leave that to go on tour for a while, you know?
I was doing the MIRA program over at SPC, the Music Industry Recording Arts thing.
Yep.
And I dropped out of that, and I was just pursuing a regular AA degree. And I was doing that for a while, and then a summer break hit, and then all this started happening, and I was like, screw that, man. I don't want to go back. I don't want to do that. And we signed with a new manager, so we've pretty much just been full-time just recording, making videos.
This is all I do, too.
Yeah. That's and then great. On the weekends, I gig, but this is it.
So I should ask, too, are you guys commercializing your Instagram page? Because I don't see you guys doing ads or anything like that yet. It's strictly just to push your band right now.
Yeah,
not
there's
yet.
There's been no income at all, believe me. It's all an outcome.
But so, you know, again, bringing into the era that we're in, and Ed and I talk about this a lot too, the idea of, do you go on tour now? Like, is that what bands do now?
Yeah.
You could just be writing, and if enough people see it, enough people see it on YouTube, like, you could have enough people listening to your stuff and, you know, it be out there and still be popular and be on the radio without ever having to get up and leave. I mean, the Lumineers did that, basically.
Yeah.
They had a song take off, and they talk about that, where it's like, all of a sudden we're playing sold-out stadiums. We didn't have to do the 3-4 years of trucking around playing for three people.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, so the world's changing so much in media. Do you want to be on tour? Like, does that
probably
sound
not
exciting?
Only when it makes sense.
Yeah, not at this point. We want to go when there's an actual
We'd be spending a lot more money than we'd make if we went right now.
Yeah.
And, we've had a lot more success when we focus on less shows and more content. Because, you know, obviously, like, if you're playing a show, you're only in that one place. But if you post a video, you reach all these different people. So we've just had a lot more success just trying to do, you know, fuse comedy with our original tunes and advertising that.
Are you worried about not being taken seriously as musicians and more just like, not Weird Al's, but
I just don't really care. I think I don't think there's to me it's not like a difference. It's all just entertainment, you know what I mean? It's like I'm not Leonard Cohen. I'm not like a serious, you know, like I want to be taken, you know, wearing like a tweed suit and shit. I just want everything we do to be, you know, kind of fresh and entertaining, and, you know, whatever tone it takes, it usually is kind of funny, but, you know.
Yeah, we're not too worried about it, because it seems to work. You know, people seem to realize that we take the music really seriously, and then there's also the comedy aspect of us.
The musicians understand what goes into it.
Totally. You know? Oh, without question. Yeah, I mean, that's what you guys are saying.
There's two layers to it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of, you said we've had more success, how are you guys measuring success? Strictly on just how many people are we reaching with this?
Yeah, just streams and follows, pretty much.
Okay.
And a lot of just interaction. There's like a lot of like girls singing it and posting videos of them doing covers of the songs. Like, that's been crazy.
Yeah, people have never listened in this amount before.
No, that is amazing. Because I don't know how much of that you've seen. And I've showed you a little bit. But of people reposting that stuff. And it's awesome. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day about, you know, Springsteen did a rare interview, but he did like a full week on Jimmy Fallon. This was like 1 or 2 years ago. But he talked about, you know, before any social media, they did a show, he came out, and the whole audience was already singing the song. And he's like, it was so incredible. Then they went to the next town. Again, no social media, no nothing. And the crowd did it again. And it just this idea that music gets people to respond in that way, you know. And now that we have this forum of Instagram and people doing it on a whim. They're not even at a show with you guys. You're just doing something. Yeah. They're so moved by it that they turn around and push it back out. I mean, that's got to be a really gratifying
thing. Did I see a couple of women do, like, recreate the turtknecks and the tennis racket? Yes. Like, do you know who those people? No, they just, like...
They live in Japan.
Some girl lives in Japan, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's crazy. Was awesome.
So, in terms of what you guys want to do, accomplish over the next year, 5 years, what are you guys hoping to get done, like, short term? And then where do you want to end up right now, based on what you know right now? Because that could change.
Yeah.
I just want to keep doing this at a bigger and bigger level. I mean, I feel like amazed that we've even come this far. I mean, we've been doing this for 10 years. Nobody's given two shits. You know?
Until
like,
the last couple of months.
Until the last couple of months. So, you know, a lot of people never get to this point. So I think it's great. I just want to keep doing it.
Yeah, just to be able to tour and just build up our audience. Want to get a bigger YouTube following and stuff like that. And
so do you have
building the story?
Are there some songs in the bag or in the can, so to speak, that you're and do you have plans to like turn them into videos and is that coming up quick here? Or?
At this point we've only been doing like minute long music videos, so we want to do some full length stuff. Mm-hmm. So on I think Saturday, right?
Yeah, we're filming our first music video.
Our full length music video, so we're gonna put that out and do another promotion on Instagram and kinda repeat that. All the songs that we have out need videos.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do some full-length videos and see how the advertisements go.
Yeah, right now we're going back to our catalog and making full music videos. And while we're doing that, we're recording the next stuff.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, it's smart, too, because, you know, that is a big thing with social media content is you've got to have it, you know? Yeah. Especially when it's something that is consumed audibly and Instagram is so visual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to really get creative. So it's smart the way you guys are doing that, where you're chopping these things up. Because even a full song is, what, 4 minutes? You know, if it's that long, and you've got to find ways to keep that fresh and new and choppy, and you know, and I feel like Tom Hanks is like, give me something snappy, you know, like. But that's true. It's got to be something that's new because people are flipping through their feed.
Oh yeah,
the attention span of people now is under 7 seconds on average. So yeah, kudos to you guys. You're doing a really good job, and I'm really enjoying it personally. So.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out the best way to make these songs last. Because, like, once you put out a song, you know, like, people listen to it a couple days and it's, like, on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, you gotta do a live version of it. You gotta do a post a video of you bumping it in the studio. And you gotta do a comedic version of it. You gotta just, like, do whatever you can to kind of make the lifespan of a song longer. Because we've got so many that we just want to blow through them and just put them out. But the more singles we put out, I feel like the more it kind of devalues the worth of it. It's like, another DNA single.
Well, and we've been kind of, the videos we've been doing have been kind of belittling them, like, like a minute little clips. So you kind of think of it like that, just on Instagram. Oh, it's a funny little clip. But like, if they had a real full music video, it makes it more of a thing. It adds weight to it.
We're trying to elevate our, you know, look at the moment.
Yeah.
Trying to make
just a half neck.
Turtleneck.
Yeah. That's funny. Where do you want people to go here and see you guys?
Definitely stay tuned on Instagram and Spotify. We got some more music coming out soon. And we got the video coming out soon, probably in like the next 2 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Do we have any shows though? I don't think we have any
shows booked.
Yeah.
What's the next song you have? What's the video going to be?
It's going to be for 4/4.
4/4. Yeah. Awesome. Okay.
It's a period piece. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's all I can say.
Soul things.
After the podcast begins.
You guys are a period piece.
Yeah. True.
Mm-hmm. Well, fellas, thanks for doing it. We appreciate it. We'll definitely try and have you back as you start putting more stuff on. If you'll come back, I understand. Absolutely. It can be really offensive.
Yeah.
We do love you guys. Right. I know sometimes you can't tell from the tone of my
it's been
face
flicking us off the entire
It's generational.
We understand that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing it, guys, and we love you, and we'll look for that video coming out here soon.
Yeah. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. See you, fellas.
Side.
You've been listening to Song Divers.
Thank you for supporting us and our sponsors and all the great independent music makers out there trying to make their way in the music business these days. Songs we heard in this episode were Friends Kiss 2, Breakup Haircut, and 4-4, all written by Danny Scordato and Alex Merrill. We also heard Laundry, written by Danny Scordato, Alex Merrill, and Harry Rye. 4-4 and Laundry are from Danny and Alex's Grand Slam Thank You Ma'am EP. And Friends Kiss 2 and Breakup Haircut are available as singles.
Get more of these two as quickly as possible. Hear their record and singles on Spotify and indulge like Questlove in their Instagram account. They are at Danny and Alex. You'll see their telltale turtlenecks and the smugness in their profile image. Oh, and that CBC show I referenced from NPR. Q.
You're listening to Dong Divers Radio. No. Song Divers.
It's not. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, people get that wrong a lot, actually.
You're listening to Dong Divers Radio.
For the pet fans out there.
I'd listen to that.
Song Divers is a production of Ybor City Records and recorded in the historic Kenwood district of St. Petersburg, Florida.